Welcome to the SMA News Today podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. I have SMA Type 2, and I am a columnist and forums director for SMANewsToday.com. Welcome to the SMA News Today podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. And today we have doing something a little bit different. So with Rare Disease Day coming up, which is an internationally recognized day to celebrate the wide range of rare diseases in the world, I've invited several of my coworkers from BioNews, which is SMA News Today's parent company, to join me today and share their stories. They each have different rare diseases, so I think this will be a really cool discussion. So first off, we have Brittany Foster, who is the HR coordinator for BioNews, and she has pulmonary hypertension. You can find her column, Recharged and Rewired, on pulmonaryhypertensionnews.com. So Brittany, thanks for coming on today.
Hey, thanks for the intro, Kev. So something that my coworker Matt and I always do for new hires and to welcome people to the company is give something called the culture meeting. And in that meeting, it's really special for me and for Matt too, to share our stories and share our lives with living with rare disease, because that's the reason why we're all here today. A little bit about me and my life with pulmonary hypertension looks a lot different than others because I was born with pulmonary hypertension. I was born with a large hole in my heart called a ventricular septal defect, and that caused me to have elevated pressures in my lungs. At birth, a little bit after birth, actually, they did a repair of the heart, so full open heart surgery, less than a year old. My poor parents for that. But I lived the rest of my life until I was 13, pretty like quote unquote normal, if you're going to use that word. I did all the sports that I wanted to. I played ice hockey, soccer, softball, track, cross country, you named it, I did it. And around age 13, I started to feel some shortness of breath and just a lot of tightness going on in my chest. And it was a bit concerning for me because, like I said, up until that point, I was fine. I was able to keep up. I was able to really be as mean as I wanted to on the ice and loved every second of it. So feeling like I was slowing down or starting to slow down really, really just didn't sit well with me. So I went to my cardiologist, who was my pediatric cardiologist at the time, who had been following me since birth. And they advised me to go to a pulmonologist. And at that appointment, they did some tests. We're pretty familiar with the testing for lung disease, the pulmonary function test, and all of that to kind of see what was going on or see if they could figure it out. And what they discovered was that they thought I had exercise-induced asthma because a lot of my symptoms were brought on by exertion and activity. So I took my inhalers from them and continued with sports. That's just my personality. I'm very, I go after the things that I want in life and nothing really holds me back. So I was very, you know, focused on the things that I wanted to do. So after taking puffs of my inhaler and doing what I was told, nothing really seemed to be working for me. And even after changing inhalers and changing medications, still nothing was working. But like people living with rare disease always do, we learn to adapt and we learn to accept our body for what it is. So in my mind, at 13 years old or 14 years old at the time, I was probably thinking, okay, well, this is just how I am. So if this is how I am, then I'll learn to live with it and I'll just be breathless. That's fine. No big deal in my little mind. So years go on, I'm still having that feeling, but still pushing through every activity that I wanted to do. I ended up going through college and graduated with very high honors, which I was super thankful for. I went to Providence College in Rhode Island, which is where I'm from, and graduated at the top 10 of my class, which is awesome. I graduated a triple major in elementary, middle school, and special education. So the special education side really ties into why I do what I do every day at BioNews as our people and culture manager, because special education field has a lot to do with advocating for students' needs, advocating for accessibility in the classroom. really being a student's voice, which is why I chose the career path that I did of special education, and using that in and using my experiences and the help that I could provide them, and advocating at IEP meetings, which is individualized education plans for the students. So I loved doing that. My career spanned 4 years as an educator. And at 26 years old, my life completely changed. I woke up one day with a terrible headache as I was going to school. And I just took a regular Tylenol and said, I'm getting my butt in the classroom and I'm going in. So I went to school feeling pretty sick and seeing spots and feeling dizzy, but I went anyway, because that's just the person that I am to a fault, I think. But I had to be there for my students, I thought. So during that day, it was in January, so it was around the time of, you know, this discussion today, I ended up passing out in the classroom and woke up a couple days later in the ICU with a diagnosis of meningitis. So after that diagnosis, it really pretty much my health spiraled, it felt like, and I couldn't really breathe well on my own anymore. I had to use oxygen support. They started to do more testing and really looking into, why is she not breathing properly? What is going on? It affected my entire body, my nervous system, my mobility really was affected by this. And really the major ones were respiratory and cardiac, which were two things that I always had going on in the back of my diagnosis journey. But this huge diagnosis and this huge, you know, condition that happened just suddenly one day really brought me back to, wow, maybe I should think more about my cardiac condition. Maybe I should have been paying more attention to my pulmonary health. So what that did was it helped me get another diagnosis, and it led me to professionals that I'm working with now for pulmonary hypertension, which that diagnosis was put back on the table as part of everything that I was going through, and seeing a cardiologist, getting a pacemaker implanted, going through 5 major surgeries from age 26 to 31. So all of that really just, you know, blew me away in terms of how difficult my health was to manage. And at 26 years old, I tried to go back into the classroom after all of this and really couldn't at the end of the day, because my health had to come first. I had to think very selfishly for the first time in my life, which was very difficult for me to do. And I chose to leave the profession, and I chose to retire at 26 because I was just getting too sick. I couldn't keep up. I couldn't do the things and be the advocate for the students that I wanted to be. So that's where I thought my career ended. In my mind at the time, I was very depressed. I remember seeing teachers going back in September or late August and starting the school year and posting their classroom pictures up. And I just remember sitting in my bed and crying and thinking, my career is completely over, and everything that I just worked so hard for the last 4 years is over. So it was a very depressing time in my life. And how BioNews came into this really saved me from one of the darkest moments of my life I've ever been through. And how that happened is through Instagram and social media. I was using hashtags for pulmonary hypertension. I was really raising awareness and sharing more of my story, which is something that was really new for me and something that I loved doing. So I raised awareness, and somebody found me through that hashtag and reached out and said, hey, we're looking for a columnist to join our first site, Pulmonary Hypertension News, and it's for BioNews is the larger company. Pulmonary Hypertension News, we're looking to launch soon. Would you be interested? And I looked up BioNews like a second before my interview, to be completely honest, and loved it. I loved the mission. I loved that there was focus on patients and quality of life for patients living with rare disease. And I got the job. So I started here with this company as a columnist for pulmonary hypertension, writing about my life with PH. At the time, I was on oxygen, so I wrote about those topics. I write a lot about mental health and the crossover of that and rare disease. So I still have my column. I still write when I can, even though this people and culture manager position takes up so much, but I still love sharing and expressing my story, whether that's through awareness on other platforms or using BioNews in my column for that. So, you know, eventually I worked my way up in this company, which has been such a gift for me, and it really helps me to power through on very difficult days. And I'm sure everybody on this call can agree that, you know, this company is not like any other. It's a company of support. It's a company of just like solidarity. And if people are going through a difficult time, then we all go through it with them. So that's something that I found here. And it's something that, you know, I've taken a lot of what I've learned as a special education teacher when it comes to advocating for students with needs and thinking so strongly about inclusiveness and accessibility and accommodations, and really have put that into my work in human resources, which I think is super valuable.
Thank you so much, Britt, for the intro. And no, I know that hits on a lot of the points I wanted to discuss with you. So so I really appreciate it. We'll definitely expand on that more. So thank you so much. And then also today we have with us, returning to the podcast, he was on last year's men's mental health episode, so Matt LaFleur. He is the culture coordinator at BioNews, works alongside Brittany, and is a columnist for Friedrich's Ataxia News Today. So Matt, welcome back, and thank you for joining today.
Hey, what's up, Kevin? Glad to be back, man.
Absolutely. Really excited to have you here. And then last but not least, my director of community content, who I work hand-in-hand with, Brad Dell, who is the director of community content for BioNews and a columnist for Cystic Fibrosis News Today. You can check out his column, Victorious, on CF News Today. And by the way, Matt's column is Little Victories. So you can check out those. But Brad, thanks for joining us today.
Stoked to be here.
Absolutely. Well, thanks again. And before we continue, if everyone could please listen to a brief word from our sponsor.
This podcast is brought to you by Genentech, the makers of a treatment for SMA. Whether you are living with SMA or are the parent to a child with SMA, make a choice today that could impact your future. Visit treatmysma.com to see why treatment matters.
Okay, so Brad, let's start with you. So Britt gave kind of her an overview of her story. For listeners who don't know about yours, can you tell us a little bit about your background with cystic fibrosis and your work with BioNews, anything you want to share about your role in the rare disease space?
Yeah, sure. So cystic fibrosis is a genetic disease. So I was born with it and diagnosed about 2 months after birth because I was literally starving to death. And thankfully, a neighbor who would always babysit me just happened to have a child who also had cystic fibrosis. And she recognized some of my symptoms and asked that I get tested. So once I went into the doctors, they did not really believe my parents. They said, there's no way that he has cystic fibrosis. And they even accused my parents of negligence and called Child Protective Services on them, thinking that, oh, they're just not feeding their child. And so eventually my mom demanded the testing. Turns out I have cystic fibrosis. And until about age 6, most of my symptoms were gastrointestinal. And so cystic fibrosis is a whole body disease. It affects, you know, your sinuses, your liver, your digestive system. And the big one, of course, is the lungs. Around age 6 is when I started culturing various bacteria that were very detrimental to my health, landed me in the hospital repeatedly. And I think really hammered in for me for the first time, oh, you're quite strange on this earth, that when other children are going off and enjoying their lunch at the cafeteria, I was, you know, sneaking away to the nurse's office, not wanting to be caught in the act of being different. Every time I go into the hospital, I'd create just these extravagant lies as to why I was gone, because I was so ashamed of my disease. I would tell them that, hey, I had to go to UK because I'm going to be a side character in the new Harry Potter movie. And my friends would say, oh, that's so cool. And then when the movie would come out, I'd be like, ah, such a bummer. They cut me from the movie. I would just go through extraordinary lengths just to make sure that people did not know that I had a disease. And you can imagine That problem was compounded when I entered middle school and high school. Everybody's already awkward. Everybody's already experiencing a lot of shame. And so for me, everything kicked into hyperdrive. That it was just so terrible to me, the idea that someone could find out about my disease and Google it and realize that cystic fibrosis is a disgusting disease, that it centers around having mucus that is super thick and it clogs up your airways and a bunch of bacteria gets stuck in there. If you were to Google my disease, you find out that I had like really stinky poops because I couldn't digest my food properly. And it was just like a nightmare, you know? And then of course there was the prognosis that I wasn't expected to live long. And I remember sitting in a biology class and we're just going through a lesson on genetics, and cystic fibrosis is one of those like, you know, stock examples of how genetics work, that two parents have recessive genes that when they come together, produce a child with cystic fibrosis. There's a 1 in 4 chance of that. And that's all good and very interesting. But what I honed in on during that science lesson was, oh, they're not expected to live past 17. And that was the first time I saw my expiration date in the middle of a biology class, surrounded by my peers who are learning the very same thing. So I entered a great anxiety, a great depression, that for years I just could not go to sleep at night, that the moment my lights were shut off, I would only think about my death. Death was always around the corner. I was terrorized by it, and I could not make my peace with it. And, you know, all teenagers have their hormones, combine hormones with the disease. And what you're bound to get is a lot of non-compliance, a lot of draining medications down the drain, a lot of yelling at my parents for asking me to take care of myself, a lot of going to hospitals and just seething in the unfairness of it all. I started getting really, really sick, partly because I was draining my medications, but also partly because all my bacteria were getting antibiotic resistant. That, you know, there were periods where I was taking 5 to 6 IVs a day, where I was throwing up about 10 times a day for a stretch of about a decade. That was how often I would vomit every single day. I could not keep on weight. It just felt impossible. I was bone thin. I did not have the energy to fight my disease. And so I just gave up. When I went through college, it was just the perfect storm of, I was studying so hard for my ambitions and yet not even knowing if I would be able to graduate college. Was wondering, is this all senseless? Is there a point to all this? Like, why should I even be trying? And the depression just deepened. Eventually, there was the perfection of the crisis, and that I lost my hearing. I had lost my right ear in 2009, but in 2016, I lost my left ear also from a separate cause that I won't even get into. But it was just like, why is lightning striking 3 times with my cystic fibrosis, with my right ear, then my left ear? And it just felt unmanageable. I did not know how to carry that burden. I went through the rest of my college experience with just the confrontation of intense ableism, people telling deaf me that because I couldn't participate in group discussions, they were taking points off my grade, telling me when my doctor said, you need to go to the ICU, they'd say, well, if you miss one more class, you just straight up fail. And I would literally tell my doctors, I can't go to the ICU. I was killing myself for my grades, despite not even knowing if I would live to have a career. Eventually, I got sepsis, a blood infection, and that totally devastated my lungs. Doctors said the beautiful, we don't have any more options left. And so my doctor started calling transplant centers all over America asking, can Brad get a lung transplant? And they all said no. The moment said they saw my summary, they said, this is one of the worst cases we've seen. There's no way. One day, my doctor was sitting on the beach and she called University of California, San Francisco. And it was kind of like her last shot because they have the best statistics in the nation. And so she's kind of thinking like, there's no way they're going to want to blow their shot at getting good statistics by taking on Brad. But the person who picked up the phone just happened to have a son who was named Brad and who had cochlear implants, which allowed him to hear. And I very much wanted cochlear implants so I could hear again. And so he felt like, oh, maybe this is fate. So he brought me aboard. Doctors would later say that they had never seen a case file that was bigger than mine. The medical records just completely overwhelmed them. And they agree, like, things probably don't look good. After much wrestling, they finally put me on the transplant list. And I got my transplant in 2017. So I'm coming up on 6 years in just a couple of days. And life has been awesome since then. I got my cochlear implants. I was able to hear, able to breathe. And I decided I don't want to waste it all. I want to create purpose with what I went through. And that took kind of two directions. One is I became a pastor, that through my struggles, I, you know, cling to my spirituality like nothing else. I felt that God got me through everything. And I want to pass along what that goodness was for me. And two, I joined up with BioNews, that I learned the power of really processing your trauma by controlling your narrative, by creating a story out of the senselessness and the madness of it all, and realizing that, gosh, if I could just confront this trauma, I really think I could have some power over it. If I could stop running from it, I could have some power over it. And so I always, in my role as a community content director, impress on people just the power of writing as a source of empathizing with others, yes, but also healing yourself. Also realizing what was the common thread of story throughout my life that I've been following all this time, and where could it take me from here? So I oversee both the columns and forums along with Kevin, and a big part of our job is just encouraging people to share stories like ours, to help others heal, to be in a company surrounded by other people who have diseases and disabilities has been just absolutely wonderful. That throughout my whole life, it was, I need to really kick my own butt to prove to people that I am not without value because of my disease. And yet at BioNews, I have coworkers saying, you better slow down or we're going to be mad at you. You got to take care of yourself. And I very much need that. So for me to work at BioNews has just been absolutely beautiful.
Thanks, Brad. And I think a line you said in there is something we can all relate to. If the four of us brought our medical records combined, it would be like the size of the Bible, Lord of the Rings, and the Odyssey combined, maybe a little longer. So that, yeah, that's it. But thank you so much, Brad, for sharing. And then Matt, I know you were on last year, so you got to share a little bit your story as well, but can you talk a little bit about your life with Friedreich's ataxia and what it kind of means for you to work in the rare disease space?
Yeah, absolutely. First, I just want to thank Brittany and Brad because their stories are so impactful. And I think there's a point I want to draw home that being in the community, living with the rare disease, you find that all the stories of people with the rare disease, like completely different rare diseases, cystic fibrosis and pulmonary hypertension and Friedreich's ataxia, and even yours, Kevin, SMA, they are completely off the wall different. Yet in our stories, there is something parallel, something that we can all relate to. And that is so powerful because we can relate to one another in a way that most people wouldn't understand. But I understand Britt's story of being frustrated at herself when she thought her career was over. And also Brad, his devastation when he found out the longevity of his disease. Those are things I can relate to. Because unlike both these guys, I had it since I was born. I had Friedreich's ataxia since I was born. But we had no idea that I had it. FA is progressive, meaning it didn't affect me till my adolescence. So at that time, I was kind of getting behind my other teammates in sports and like running around, catching the ball and stuff. So we thought that it was just because my feet were flat, which my feet are flat. But I went to a podiatrist and he checked me out and he said, well, yeah, his feet are flat, but that's not the problem. The problem is he has a gait in his walk. It's like a manner of unsteadiness in my walk. So he didn't know what was going on. He recommended me to another doctor. So I went to doctors all over the state of Louisiana for trying to figure out what exactly was wrong with me. I had no idea. I was finally diagnosed in New Orleans with a condition, Friedreich's ataxia. But beyond those words, I had no idea what that meant. All I knew is that when I got home, it seemed like everything changed because up to that time, I was a little athlete. That was who I was. That was who all my friends were. But I slowly got left behind with all my athletic friends. I wasn't able to keep up with them. So in turn, I took it personal back then, but it's kind of just the way kids are. You gravitate around those who like the same things as you. I wasn't able to play sports as much anymore. So I felt like I lost my friends too, which was really a bummer, really depressing at the time. I didn't understand. If I ever asked about what made me bad at sports, I was told that it was a little nerve disease, but don't talk about it. So I learned to keep it inside, and I watched as my world changed. I was ambulatory. I was walking all through high school, but kept getting that was really tentative, I had to lean on walls to get by. And in college, I saw that there was no way I could get around campus on my own. So I sat in a wheelchair for the first time. And I thought that that would be the epitome of disability, being in a wheelchair. But sitting in one, I saw it as more of a tool to help me get by. And I was happy in a wheelchair. I was able to talk with my friends as I strolled across campus, which is new, which was new for me at the time. I didn't think I would. So that was a great thing. But I did well in my classes and stuff. But all the while, FA was progressing. FA was getting more and more extreme. So that by the time I graduated from undergrad and then grad school, it was really, sorry, it was really affecting me. It was really at the point where I didn't know what I was able to do. I couldn't drive to a work location. I couldn't move around a building in my wheelchair quickly. It was I felt like I was a victim of FA. I felt like there was nothing I could give to the world at large. So I moved back home after grad school, and I thought that that was what my life was. I was just going to be a victim of my disease. So that was a bummer. But lo and behold, I found a job application online for Friedrich's Ataxia News. Someone to write about your life with the FA. So I thought, man, I can't do a lot outside the house, but I can definitely do this. So I applied and thankfully I got in. So I was a part of FA News. I was able to write about my experience with FA. And a side effect of that is I got on board. I got to meet all kinds of people with different rare diseases, people all over the world. And I found something odd, something I talked about before, that even though all of our stories are completely separate, they all have a connecting line running through them. I can relate to everyone on this call and everyone, struggling with any type of rare disease because even though it might not be the same thing, they're parallel to each other. They run alongside, and I can relate to them, and I think others can relate to me. So I think that's beautiful. So my job at BioNews now, like you said, I'm the culture coordinator. My job is to get everyone from different parts of the world, different rare diseases, and those without rare diseases, because our employees, typically our full-time employees, may not have a rare disease themselves, but they're so much into our mission that they have to connect with those of us who do have it. They have to see the world as we do because that's so powerful, so empathetic. So there's some dividing line through that, and I'm excited that I get to portray that in what I do. And overall, I'm just happy to be here, and I'm happy to be a small part of what Binance has to offer.
Thanks, Matt. Matt, really appreciate it. And I just want to say to our listeners, so this is definitely one of our like heavier, like can be kind of sappy, but really inspiring like conversations. Normally, the four of us are very reverent, so I'm sure we'll get to that too. But before we continue, if everyone could please listen to one more brief word from our sponsor.
This podcast is made possible by Genentech, the makers of a treatment for SMA. If you are living with SMA, the subtle changes that happen from one day to the next can be hard to notice until a key function is lost. Many people find that these changes can impact their life, not just physically, but also emotionally. Since the progression of SMA is relentless, taking action now is important. If you've waited to go on treatment or were told there were no treatments for you, now might be the time to talk to your doctor. Breakthroughs in science have led to more options than ever before in treatment and care. Choosing a disease-modifying treatment can make a difference. Why wait? Visit treatmysma.com to see why treatment matters.
Okay, Britt, I want to come back to you. So in your intro, you were talking about the transition from your teaching career and then eventually to bio news. And you mentioned in there that part of the way you acquired the initial columnist position was through sharing your story on social media. And like I've never known you as someone who hasn't like shared like everything about your life and your story on social, but I'm curious, was there a time where you weren't as open about your health experiences, or what kind of drew you to that point of wanting to advocate and talk about your life on the internet and on social media and with your in regards to your health?
Yeah, that's a really good question because I haven't always been as outspoken as I am now. I think that going through trauma, whether, it's physical, emotional, whatever it is, really changes people. And like Brad said, kind of in his talk, that sharing about that and sharing about the trauma that you've gone through is has holds with it a sense of like feeling freed. And that really empowered me to keep talking and to keep sharing because I thought to myself, if other people are suffering or they're suffering in silence, hearing somebody else's story or reading somebody else's words really could make a huge difference for somebody. And there are times when I will just spill my heart out. I will overshare to a fault. And I have to check myself on that because I feel like we all do sometimes. And I become very passionate about the things that I care about and that are important to me. But, those with rare disease, there almost isn't a topic that's off limits. I mean, Kev, Matt, and Brad, we've all had some wild conversations amongst each other that probably would be inappropriate in other workplaces, but we talk about our GI habits and the things like that that we all have in common. So that type of discussion and that type of freedom to talk so openly about that and to not feel, oh gosh, am I weird for saying this? Or am I a bad person for speaking about this? No, because somebody can really relate to that. And the amount of really the thing that sparked my interest in wanting to advocate and wanting to spread awareness was because I thought back to myself as that 13-year-old that was running on the soccer field and feeling short of breath or feeling a lot of tightness in my chest that was just puffing on inhalers and nothing was helping. So in me sharing what happened and in that span of time from 13 to 26 when I was finally re-diagnosed, sharing the information like, hey, make sure that when they check your pulse ox, they also do it while you're exercising and not just when you're sitting there. That really has helped so many people, especially those in the congenital heart disease community that I'm a part of too, not just the PH and pulmonary hypertension side of things, but making parents aware, hey, if your kid's really short of breath or, and you think that there's something going on and inhalers aren't helping, make sure they do that step test, make sure they do that walk test. So there's certain things that I've learned along my way that I have been personally, like, a lot of my conditions have progressed because of my delay in diagnosis. And my heart breaks for somebody else that has that gap of delay in diagnosis, because I have so much impact, like, affected because of that delay in low oxygen for chronically for 26 years, affects every system of the body. It affects your nervous system. It affects, you know, your brain health and your mental function and your cognitive abilities. It affects everything. My GI system is something that has really slowed down and has come to a pretty much stop over the last few years. And a lot of that points back to, hey, you've had chronic low oxygen for the last 31 years of your life. So getting that treatment to somebody and maybe being the voice that could help somebody find that treatment or get the proper testing done really is what I advocate for.
Definitely. I mean, I think that's a lot for all of us. I think that's a big reason why we write about our experiences with SMA, PH, CF, and FA, and the numerous other rare diseases out there that many of which the BioNews covers, is that we want to be a voice for others who have gone through the same things as us or are going through, and being a voice to those who don't feel heard as often. So absolutely. And Brad, on that note, so like with your role and mine, we've probably read more columns than anyone else over the years of like all the different disease communities that we cover. And so with you having read a lot of SMA columns over the years, what are some parallels or differences, whatever kind of things you want to talk about in relation to SMA and CF that you've learned and has helped you better understand my community?
Yeah, I think kind of from when I first started in my role as a copy editor before as a community content director, I was reading a lot of spinal muscular atrophy columns and was just thinking, oh, this kind of feels like a sister or brother disease, that we have a lot of the same treatments, that we're both, you know, these genetic diseases that really need to be diagnosed ASAP. If they're not, it's to our great detriment. Everything from, yeah, just having struggles with like keeping healthy weights to putting on, you know, our big vest and having that shake us up, and, you know, any type of device that helps us to cough, we battle Pseudomonas, things like that. Like, it was just kind of eerie to me to realize like, oh, we're actually a very similar disease. And yet I had never heard of SMA before I started at this company. And to be able to talk to the wonderful columnists there through the years, I think just gave me a greater appreciation for the common and shared plight that we undergo, that the community is bigger than our specific disease community, that we could really learn from one another, that there have been tips and tricks that people at the SMA have shared with me that I've never seen thrown around in the CF community. And I've been able to share some things from the CF community that people at the SMA are like, oh, snap, I never heard that kind of advice. And so I really think that there's greater strength in us being able to share information, being able to share experiences, not only in practicality and, you know, collecting advice and information, but also in just knowing like, cool, there are other people in the same kind of fight as us, who when I speak to a mentally or emotional struggle, these are people who are going to get it. And I wish I had that when I was younger, honestly, because it was very difficult for me to talk to people with CF who were older, because to me, they were cool, here's a worst case scenario, or even here is my inevitability, that as their, you know, health is dying down and they're having trouble keeping on weight and they have to go through all these scary procedures, it just felt like seeing these prophecies of my eventual doom. Whereas I think if I was able to talk to people at the SMA, it would have been more approachable, because I would have that slight detachment of this is a different disease, and yet also being able to collect wisdom and collect empathy from them, I think would have been really good and more approachable for me in that season.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the vest. So for listeners who don't know, the vest airway clearance system is this device that I've been using since 2010 to help clear secretion in the lungs. It basically you it wraps around your chest and shakes you and kind of makes you do like a bobblehead type thing, and it is designed to loosen all the secretion there. But it was fascinating to learn once I started working at BioNews and working with the CF community that it was the CF community that device was originally designed for, and then the SMA community kind of adopted it. So it's a really cool thing that yeah, we've learned a lot of parallels there. I think, I mean, and it's really cool to see. And I think, and yeah, both being genetic conditions, both being something like you live with your entire life, and there's been a lot of really relatable experiences. So it's really cool to see. And then Matt, on that note too, so one of the things we've talked about, and you talked about this in sharing your story, is that you were born with FA, but it did not know you had it until later on in life, and so you didn't transition to using a wheelchair till later in life. And for me, it's like, yeah, I was born with SMA, but and I was also I knew that I was diagnosed very early on, so like it's like something I've always known. That's like all I've known. For you, it was a transition, and you mentioned the transition to using a wheelchair. So my question is, how has your perspective changed now since the time of when you were first diagnosed and when you started to experience the physical progression?
Oh, I think I have to go with what Brad implied. That for me as a child, seeing somebody with FA who was older than me was like a dissonance. That was like a prophecy of what's in store for the future, and that scared me. That really terrified me because, I had this kind of ableist mindset. I wanted to be able to do whatever I wanted. Because I have this condition, don't pay attention to that, I'm gonna try. But seeing somebody in the future really upset me because it showed me that maybe I can't try. But I don't think that is the case. I think that's what I thought when I was a child because I didn't know any better. I think that my experience at BioNews and the experience over here is that seeing other people with different rare diseases or the same rare disease is always enlightening for me. Even if somebody is more progressed than me or less progressed than me, they have something to teach me about life. And that is so beautiful. That is so special. Something I could miss out on if I wasn't paying attention to that. Even though I didn't think so at first, I was scared of progression. I was scared of the future. Now that is completely reversed because I look towards people of all different diagnoses, of all different progression levels, to see what they have to say about life and see what we have in common and what they have to teach me that I can grow from. And I think that is a powerful example, and I'm so grateful for that.
Definitely. Thanks, man. I really appreciate that. And yeah, these have been some really great stories. I really appreciate you all coming on today and sharing. And one thing I always ask guests here, either people with SMA or caregivers as well, is to kind of give listeners a glimpse into your daily life, especially now, because you all have talked about growing up with your various conditions and kind of like how you got to where you are now. But looking at what your day-to-day looks like today. So Britt, we'll start with you. Can you kind of walk us through, and I with the understanding that it's also anyone in the world of disability rare diseases knows that it can change day to day, but for a quote unquote typical day for you during the week, walk us through what that looks like.
You ready for this? I'm just
Let's do
kidding.
it. Let's go.
Welcome to the circus of Britt Foster's life. Could be a reality show, honestly. So in terms of treatment daily, I mostly my pulmonary hypertension and any type of lung conditions or issues that arise from that is mostly heart related for me. So I take a lot of cardiac related medications. I take five different medications each day, by mouth. I do two different inhalers. I have nebulizer treatments that take 15. Sorry, my dogs are barking in the background. This is just wonderful.
No worries. No worries.
Story of my life. Welcome to my life. It's chaos. So,
it's happened plenty of times on the podcast. Don't worry. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Like, go figure. Bernie, knock it off. My dog Bernie's a pest. He's a little King Charles and he acts like he is a bulldog, but that's like me though. I think he takes after his mother because I'm this tiny person and I act like I'm 7 feet tall. So, large personality, tiny person, large personality, large heart, literally cardiomyopathy, good times. but anyway, so besides the treatments that take, you know, 15 minutes each, I do those 3 times a day. I do things like vest therapy, like you and Brad mentioned. I use a vest for airway clearance. I do airway clearance daily now since having COVID and just getting over illness and things like that. It's really taken a toll on my lungs, and I'm sure you could probably tell, or when I point it out, you'll be able to tell now that I take a lot of breaths during my talking. It's not out of nerves or anxiety. It's just, I literally can't breathe. So that's why I do it. And just work during the day has always been super helpful for me. Just to, you know, take my mind off of things, to connect with people like all of you on this call, and to really share my mission in HR, which is accessibility and making sure things are accommodating and inclusive in the workplace, which I think BioNews is a great example of how companies should be and the power that those with disabilities can have, and really empowering them to take on careers and not be afraid of being dismissed. So work is a huge part of my day. I have a lot of self-care routines that I put in place. I focus on things that I can control. So even on days that I'm really not feeling well, I always make sure to have good skincare routine. That's really important to me. So keeping up with that and making sure I have some time for the gym and to work out as I can. Some days I can't work out or just have to take a short walk, and that's okay. I'm learning to kind of be accepting of that. And, you know, mixing medications, treatments, work, self-care, all of that together is a whirlwind, let me tell you. It's not easy to practice all of this. Some days I just work. Some days I just take care of myself. I don't do all of these things every single day because that would be so overwhelming and feel impossible. But I try to, and I try to make it a point to set time aside for myself too. At the end of the day, that's very important. Another thing that I'm always doing, and that takes up honestly maybe 2 hours sometimes a day. Sorry for Bernie, who's still barking in the background. That takes up 2 hours of the day sometimes, is advocating for myself. So not only am I advocating for others on BioNews and in these rare disease communities, I'm advocating because I'm making phone calls to doctors. I'm checking in to see when a procedure is going to be scheduled. I'm sending over pacemaker transmissions and then following up with my team afterwards, taking calls from them, getting blood work done weekly, checking my labs and everything like that. Lab work is important. X-ray scans sometimes once a month. So all of that has to be fit into my schedule. And I'm super grateful for this environment that allows for accommodation and allows for us to take care of ourselves in that way. So that's really special. And that's very unique, I think, about BioNews and the culture that we have.
Absolutely. No, and I love what you said too about it's impossible for all of us to do everything we want to do in one day. And I think that goes for anyone, like rare disease or not, but especially in our world, it's like, you kind of have to take it day by day, and that's why there is fluidity and there's change, but absolutely so. And then Brad, what about you? And by the way, too, for our listeners, Brad lives out in Paradise in Hawaii. So yeah, I don't think he mentioned that yet, but so what does a day typically look for you other than lounging on the beach and reading?
Yeah. So, you know, post lung transplant's quite different. After lung transplant, life feels like it's on easy mode. I'm using cheat codes. I just pop some pills in the AM and PM, keep up my exercise, and that is a world of difference from before my transplant. Before my transplant, it was I'd wake up by vomiting. That was my alarm clock. It was clockwork. And then I'd get down to about an hour to an hour and a half of different treatments that were like nebulized or the vest shaking me up. And I would do that in the morning, at noon, and then about like 3 p.m. and then at nighttime before bed. Then between that, I would have my IV treatments. So I took my IVs mostly portably. So I'd have a little ball that would give me my IVs during classes and whatnot. And sometimes I'd be on, you know, like 5 doses of IVs a day. Sometimes just a couple. Would depend what I was fighting at that time. Before every meal, and I still have to do this post-transplant, I have to pop some pancreatic enzymes to help me digest my food. And, you know, I think before transplant, fatigue really played a role in things that I really had to measure out, like, what is this going to do to me in my day? And really gamble with, cool, is this worth it? Is it not? Am I going to be feeling it the next day? Post-transplant, I still have more fatigue than the average person, but I'm able to, I think, more put boundaries on my energy because I really want to care for these new lungs. But I also just naturally feel more energy. I'm not fighting a bunch of infections at once. So I don't know, that's a little jumbled up. But yeah, pre-transplant, post-transplant, it's an absolutely different thing. Another thing I forgot to mention is I used to have to do feeding tubes. And that took up a great chunk of time, just prepping it, and, would often contribute to my nausea and whatnot. And sometimes during the daytime, I'd also need to use it. Post-transplant, don't have to do that anymore. So it's just very, night and day for me, that I'm very much living the daytime now and I'm loving it. And just trying to stay grateful for how easy life is now with my transplant. So I'm super grateful.
And you forgot to mention you get to talk to me like every day through work. So that's, you know, the best part of your day.
Yeah, that is another dreaded treatment.
But Matt, and then what about you? So at like walking through a typical day of the week for you.
Sure. I think my day can be divided into two things. My physical upkeep and my purposeful upkeep. Physical upkeep as living with the rare disease, super important. My routine involves vitamins, involves trying to eat somewhat healthy, trying to exercise, going to physical therapy appointments and whatnot, using my stay frames or anything to keep me mobile. Maybe your readers don't know, your listeners don't know, it doesn't have a treatment or a cure. So I'm just kind of winging it, you know? I'm just trying to do what seems to work for me and others in my community. So I'm grateful for that. That's about the physical upkeep time, the purposeful. That is what's super important. That is what keeps it going, because to wake up today, the reason for that, I'm able to find that through my work, through doing what I do, through trying to advocate on behalf of FA, on behalf of the rare disease population as a whole. Also things like reading is something that I didn't do right after college, but it's something that I find so much meaning in. Reading and also writing. I have a column that we talked about earlier, comes out twice a month, but I love that is my outlet, you know, getting my thoughts down on writing. So I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful to find a purpose. I think that's the one thing all of us on this call have in common, that finding a purpose is what makes the difference between being alive and living. And I'm grateful that BioNews, for example, helped us find a purpose. And whatever that can be for any listener, no matter if you're battling a rare disease or not, Finding a reason to exist and to go on. Your purpose is essential, and that is beautiful. And I am here for it, and I am grateful to everyone else on this call.
Thanks, Brad. And Matt, Brad, Brad, thank you so much for. I know we could talk all day, but this has been really great discussion. And just before we close out, does anyone have any closing thoughts, either about anything we just talked about, or with Rare Disease Day coming up? Just any quick word anyone want to share?
I think you did an amazing job, Kev, during this talk and this podcast. And I just want to say that the model that BioNews uses and the accessibility and accommodations piece that's just written into our mission, more people need to see what we do. They need to see our mission. They need to see how it works, because I think of myself at 26 years old thinking that I couldn't do anything with my life anymore. And how many others are out there right now thinking the same thing, or living with an illness that they think is the end all to their career, or the end all to finding meaning, or to waking up in the morning and fighting for something. So just having more awareness about our mission, I think, is important to spread, and just letting other businesses know and other places know it is possible to reach this level, and it should be the norm soon. We shouldn't be so unique 10 years from now. So I hope people catch on, and really it could make a difference in someone's life to the point where they now have meaning and they now have purpose. So I just wanted to share that.
Thanks, Brad. I think that's a perfect note to end on. And for our listeners there too, you can check out more of Britt, Brad, and Matt's stories following their columns, their presence on social media. I'll link all their columns in the description here. But I want to thank you all so much for joining. I know we talk all the time, but it's really great to be able to share our stories with a wider audience. So, and for our listeners too, you can check out more stories and conversations like this by subscribing to the SMA News Today podcast. You can also connect with us directly on our forums and follow smanewstoday.com for all the latest SMA news and perspectives. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. Thanks so much for listening, and we will see you next time. Take care.
The information in our flash briefings and podcasts are provided for informational and educational purposes only. Be sure to tune in daily to SMA News Today for the latest news and perspectives regarding the disease. Discover more content that might be of interest to you at www.smanewstoday.com. And be sure to follow us on social media and join our SMA News Today forums, a trusted SMA community ready to welcome you anytime.